Hello, everyone. My name is Arama, compulsive overeater. It's very nice to see you all. Thanks to everybody who's attending and all who are serving on this meeting. I am very grateful for the opportunity to carry the message. I have found so much about my level of spiritual fitness through working this program. I have about 3 years in program now, and 2.5 years actually. I'll be working on 3 years in September, and have grown a lot, but also have learned that the more you learn, the more you find that you need to know. So I will start by sharing what it was like. I will go into what happened, and then I'll let you know what it's like now. So I do want to give a little trigger warning at the beginning of this, because I do mention specific foods, and I also I don't go into great detail, but I do discuss sexual trauma and food insecurity and physical and mental abuse in my history. So I will start by saying that, and the reason why I mention these things is because what I've realized over the course of the time that I've been attending meetings and sharing with fellows is that these experiences are unfortunately very common and not discussed often. And so many of us suffer believing that we're alone in these experiences. And what really worked for me when I first came into program was the understanding that relatability lends itself to vulnerability. And so, I certainly hope that these things will be helpful and not hindrances to anybody. So yeah, I was born to very young parents, and I think that had a lot to do with the way that I was raised. My mother was 18 and my father turned 17 2 months after I was born. And so these people were not necessarily prepared for parenting. I do believe now, after some time with recovery, that they did the best that they could. My mother suffered with addiction for a period of time until I was about 9 years old. My father was intermittently absent from my life, and as a result, a lot of children, I think, who people recognize aren't well cared for or supervised, people take advantage of. And so I did suffer some sexual abuse in my childhood and some other adverse experiences because of my mother's addiction. We didn't always have money and we didn't always have food. And I didn't understand the connection between my dependence on food for comfort and the lack of it in my formative years. But after doing some processing and really working these steps, I started to understand where a lot of my insecurities come from. I was removed from my mother's care when I was 6 years old, and had the opportunity to live with my paternal grandmother, which was an experience of care and concern that I wasn't used to and am still forever grateful for, because it gave me an understanding about the way you can be nurtured, and not just with words, but with action. And even though I still really struggle with my dependence on food, I understand how they don't call it comfort food for nothing, and that we do share and nurture with food. And so I'm not one of those people who believes that food only serves as fuel. I believe that food serves as connection. And it was reinforced in my experience as a child, coming from a space of food insecurity and moving into a space where my grandmother spent a good amount of her time preparing meals, planning meals, even packing lunches, just so that it was apparent that I was cared for and all of her grandchildren were cared for. So, I was reunified with my mother when I was 8, and my parents remarried. And I think that they did put in a good amount of effort to try to work it out, but there was a lot of dysfunction and just a lot of wounds that weren't healed. And I think some self-awareness that doesn't come about overnight. And so if I was 6, then you can imagine that would make my parents 23 and 25, respectively. They were still very young, still very young when I was removed from my mother's care. And then eventually, when I was 12, they divorced a second time. And my mother did struggle with mental illness, severe depression, and what I would characterize as bouts of mania. I'm not exactly sure of her diagnoses. She's not very open about those things, but based on what I was able to observe, I would say that there were definitely some manic episodes in there. As a result, I was parentified. I had a lot of responsibility for my siblings. I have a twin brother. I also have a younger brother, and I have a younger sister who is not my mother's daughter, so I wasn't raised with her. But I was tasked with the care of my siblings because my mother was incapable a lot of the time due to her addiction and then subsequent mental illness. I was tasked with a lot of the care of the household, including cooking. And that was really where I found food. That was really where I found that I could exercise a level of control, but also have some comfort in my own caretaking. And I put in a lot of effort to try to offer that to my brothers because it's a very uncomfortable situation when you really don't know what you're going to eat, when you really don't know what's coming next. And even after my parents remarried, I was still in that position of caretaker. I was still preparing meals and, you know, just we were making our own way in a lot of situations. And I eventually left home when I was 15. I left home and I had my son, my only child, when I was 16 years old. I was in a relationship with his father from the time that I was 16 until the time that I was 30. And as you could probably guess, it was not a very healthy situation. I didn't have healthy roles modeled for me. And so I pretty much perpetuated the cycle that I had been born into and didn't have a lot of self-awareness about it. Then for another 3 years or so, from the age of 35 to 38, I was in a different, very toxic and emotionally abusive relationship. I eventually realized that something was going on. Now, I hadn't figured out that the food was not a solution. I was still leaning very heavily on food, but I did realize that there was some lack of self-awareness. There was something going on inside of my self-concept that was precipitating this kind of like toxic outward experience. Now, I'm not suggesting that I was to blame for being victimized, but I do understand now, after processing a lot of my character defects, that these are mechanisms that I learned were beneficial in that particular context that I was carrying into my adulthood and that were no longer working. So, I really started to dive into the binging when my son was born. And I recognized that the nature of the relationship between my son's father and I was very controlling. And because I had learned that I could exercise a level of control with food in my upbringing, I feel like it was just a natural kind of transfer. And it didn't feel unnatural or uncomfortable at all to lean on food. And where I didn't struggle with my weight in my childhood because I didn't always have access to food, in my late youth and young adulthood where I was self-sufficient and providing the food, I had access all the time. And I made sure that I had access all the time because there was absolutely no way that I was going to be in that situation again. And I would die before I would see my child in that situation. And so I coped with food because it was available all the time and it was socially acceptable. My son's father had severe issues with alcoholism. And I judged him very harshly for those issues, not recognizing that I was leaning on a substance myself, not recognizing that food was my alcohol, not even understanding the concept of alcoholic foods or anything like that at the time. I just kind of set myself on this moral high ground and decided that, if he was going to control me, then I was definitely going to be in charge of something. And food was it. And I would guess probably from the time I was about 19 until the time that I was maybe 30, I had gained about 120 pounds. And eventually I started to put in some effort to lose weight, but not with the understanding that I had some kind of a toxic relationship with food, just that I was unhealthy and I was unattractive and I needed to do something about, my overall image, but not necessarily my spiritual fitness. So what happened? I ran away from home so many times, but the last time I ran away from home, I was 38 years old and I was running away from a toxic relationship, left all of my stuff behind and went to live with my aunt for a little while and resolved that I could not live like this anymore. How I would change, I wasn't sure, but I started to go to therapy. And in one therapy session, I talked to my therapist about OA. She suggested it because she said she had other clients who it benefited and that she thought I might be interested. And I didn't take offense. I knew that I was overweight and I knew that I was uncomfortable. I was diabetic. I had high blood pressure. I was taking four different medications. I was not able to get up in the morning and feel comfortable in my body. I couldn't fit anything that I bought. I hated to look at myself. I didn't want to see a mirror. I definitely didn't want to see a scale. And something had to give. And when she suggested it, I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll consider it. But I just kind of blew it off. Honestly, I went about my day and then I went over to my dad's house that night, and my dad and my stepmom were watching reruns of Mike and Molly. And I don't know if you've ever watched a show, but they met at an OA meeting. And I was like, no way, this is crazy. This is synchronicity of the highest order. And I was like, okay, so yeah, you need to go to an OA meeting. So the very next day, I was like, okay, I'm going to go to an OA meeting. And I went online and I found a meeting in person and I got there. Now, this is in the middle of COVID, right? So I was like, yay, in person. But when I got there, they weren't meeting, they hadn't updated the site. And I was just like, okay, well, maybe it's not for me because I was really not, I didn't want to do it, but I just felt like I needed to do it. And so I was like, okay, well, never mind. I'm just going to go. I'm going to leave. But something said, go around. Now I know it was my higher power, but it's something said, go around to the other side of the church and see. Maybe it's just not open on this side. And when I got there, it said, oh, no, we meet on Zoom now. And I was like, okay, so you're not off the hook. So I went to this meeting. And initially, I didn't want to be on camera. I didn't want to talk. I didn't want to share. I just wanted to be present and kind of feel it out because that's my comfort zone. But I was immediately challenged because of, the Zoom environment and all the bombers and the stuff that happens in those meetings to turn on my camera and, to introduce myself. And I struggled with vulnerability for a long time, but I was challenged in that arena to be myself and open up. And it was a blessing. It was a blessing that I could not have guessed would impact me in the way that it has. And so eventually I attended this meeting twice. And on the second meeting, I was encouraged to share. And I was like, I don't want to share. Like that's the last thing I want to do. But I was encouraged to share. And I did. And I didn't have a whole lot to say. And my voice shook when I spoke. And I was deathly afraid that I was being judged. And after I shared, someone sent in the chat, you're home. And I just felt so welcomed. I felt so embraced. And that same person reached out to me afterwards. You know how we say, if you're open to outreach, go ahead and put your information in the chat. And I did. And that same person reached out to me after the meeting and was like, you're so brave and I'm so happy that you're here. And please reach out if I can do anything to help. And, this program absolutely works. And I was so encouraged. And I was just like, oh my God, so really all you got to do is the thing that you're afraid to do. And then wait for something good to happen. And it was just constantly reinforced in the meeting. So eventually I found a sponsor in that meeting and I started to work the steps. And this is after the third week. But I met a sponsor who absolutely had what I wanted. Abstinence and spiritual fitness in a way that I couldn't conceive of having myself, but I knew I wanted it. And so we started working the steps. We jumped right in and I was kind of stuck at my step four. I was having a hard time getting to it, and a friend of mine passed away. And he passed away from heart failure as a result of complications from diabetes. And, it's just really reinforced for me that, but for the grace of God, there go I. And I was motivated to take the next step because I was venting to my sponsor about how I was so impacted. And, very matter of fact kind of person. And I'm grateful for that kind of input. He said, you just have to work these steps. The program is not the tools, the program is the steps. And he encouraged me to move forward in my step work. And I was like, I don't want to hear that. And a lot of the things that he would suggest, I would be like, I don't want to do those things. But I remembered from the very beginning, I didn't want to share and I did, and I was embraced. And so, I've just been constantly challenged over the course of this time to do the thing that I don't really want to do and wait for a positive outcome and trust that it's going to be that way. And after I started to work those steps, once I got past step four, I felt like this relief. I felt like something just kind of like unlocked. And I really began to like speed run these steps. And I felt empowered. I felt capable. I felt supported. I felt like I was managing in a way that I hadn't before. And then I started to reflect on the promises God was really doing for me, what I couldn't do for myself, and that I really could trust that God was present and that my higher power was faithful and capable, and that I didn't always have to be in charge of everything, that I wasn't the boss of all of this stuff. And if I could let go of that, then I could allow things to unfold without having to feel like I had to manipulate everything into existence. That changed my world. I eventually dropped 86 pounds. I was able to release 86 pounds of weight and maintained an imperfect abstinence, but abstinence nonetheless, in a way that I have never been able to maintain over the course of the time that I had just been working to lose weight for vanity's sake. This level of spiritual fitness really just reinforces that if I will allow for some stillness and trust that I don't have to force things to be, that the way they unfold are better, it's going to be better than anything I could ever have planned. And I see the timer here. I'm just going to close really quickly by sharing something that's really resonant for me from the step three. This is the 12 Steps and Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous, the second edition that I'm reading from. And this is on page 23, the last paragraph. Once we compulsive eaters truly take the third step, we cannot fail to recover. As we live out our decision day by day, our higher power guides us through the remaining nine steps. When we falter, we are reminded of our commitment to live by God's will alone. And we trust that the willingness and ability will come if only we ask for them. When we get off track, our higher power will guide us back. As long as we are sincerely trying to know and do God's will, we can confidently face any situation life brings because we no longer have to face it alone. We have what we need anytime we are willing to let go of self-will and humbly ask for help. And that has been the greatest gift that I could have asked for, which I didn't ask for, but it just came, and it saved my life, honestly. So I always pitch it and keep coming back. It works. Thank you.